Joining me on the line is Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn, thanks for joining us today.
Well, you're welcome, Dave. It's very nice to be here.
Carolyn, we have done one interview before. It was a great interview. We covered a topic that both of us have been researching for many years. And today we're going to be talking about a new book out called The Artist Within the Warlord and Adolf Hitler You've Never Known by Carolyn Yeager and Wilhelm Christman, PhD. Carolyn, let's start with the book, the idea of the book. Tell the listeners how it was that you and Wilhelm came up with this idea, when you did, and what was the impetus to it?
It was in 2008 that I joined a German discussion group on the internet. Wilhelm was there as one of the participants. And at some point, someone had brought up Hitler and said something about evil. And Wilhelm wrote, I saw Hitler in person, and I looked into his eyes, and I didn't see any evil there. And I remember how blue his eyes were, how deep blue. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, who is this person who met Adolf Hitler and is saying that? And so I spoke up right away and asked him to say more about that. He said a little bit. He was a young man, a teenager still, and he was in the Hitler Youth in Austria. He was an Austrian who had relocated to the United States because of his work after the war, his job for the Austrian government.
Carolyn, can you give the listeners a little bit of history about this fellow, who he is? I read in your book, of course, I think it was like on the last page, a little biography about him. He was born in 1919, as you said, in Austria. But can you tell the listeners a little bit about him, his background?
Well, you see, Dave, his background is so interesting, and his life was so filled with events of great interest and drama that it would take another show or a few shows to talk about him. So I can't go into too much about him, but he was a fantastic fellow, and he was a member of the Hitler Youth. And they were invited to the Nuremberg rally in 1938, because in 1939 he was in the Luftwaffe by then, you know, had already been called up. So they went to Nuremberg. Of course, Hitler was there in person and all, and Austria by then was a part of the Reich. They had a great time. So he told me all this, and we started emailing, and he sent me a big autobiography about himself that he had written in German, and then he translated it into English for his family members, his kids, and so on. I was starting to say he had come to the United States in 1952, I think it was, with his two youngest children. He eventually had four. They relocated here and stayed here because of his work with the Austrian government. He sent me that, and we just went from there. I asked him if I could edit it. I did all that, and we became friends, internet friends. He talked about this book by Hermann Giesler. In the midst of all this, said a very good portrait of Hitler. So I asked him to translate some of it because it was only in German. So here we get into where the source of our book that we did was the book by Hermann Giesler, an architect friend of Adolf Hitler, a 500-page book in German. The last third of it was all about Giesler's experiences and times with Hitler in the Führerbunker. That's what he titled that whole section. Part of it was the With Hitler in Paris section, which I thought, wow, that's just fantastic. And he loved it, too. He ended up translating that whole section, With Hitler in Paris, and that was the first translation that we did. And he translated it, and then he sent it to me, and his English presentation needed a lot of work. And so I got started working on that, and then if I didn't understand something or if I didn't think it was clear enough, I would ask him, just read it from the book in German, but read it in English, just exactly word for word, the way that Giesler has written it. So he would do that. He didn't mind doing that. And it always came very clear to me then, oh, that's what he's saying now. And then we could put it into a little bit better English that was better understood. Now, the talking about the people who are going to read it, we had, while we were still working on the with Hitler in Paris, the Paris trip, which maybe I'll say right now, took place the day before the armistice was signed. After the Battle of France, Hitler took his two favorite architects and his favorite sculptor, his close military aides that were still staying with him at the headquarters, and went on a very early morning flight to Paris. I mean, because he wanted to look at the architecture of Paris. And that's what it was. It was a trip to look at the important architectural buildings, landmarks, achievements that he had read about and knew all about, but he had never seen them. And that's what that visit was for. And it's quite fascinating, really. So that is how we got started. Oh, yeah, well, one more thing. While we were working on it, I said, you know, we can't just keep this for ourselves, and I don't want to just put it out on the Internet. We should publish this somewhere. This is so good. And he agreed.
Well, thank you, Carolyn, for explaining that. And I remember that part in the book where Hitler took off in the wee hours to visit these sites in Paris. And I was really surprised. Well, now I'm not a Hitler expert, but of course I didn't know that he was really regarded by even architects as someone who really knew his stuff. And he could discuss this stuff in great detail and at length. Did you know this about Hitler before you started this project?
I believe I did, but I didn't know about the visit to Paris at all. I didn't know that he went to Paris on this particular trip. So it was hard to remember what I knew because it's pretty far back when this all started. Hitler had an amazing mind and an amazing ability to retain what he read. And he read, you know, he was a vast reader in many, many subjects and areas. He read military history. He read all about shipbuilding and the naval histories. He read about art, and he loved architecture. We have in the introduction that he did close to 1,000 paintings existing in the world today. Let me get 700 and some, I think, that are known to exist that were by him. Some just sketches, drawings, paintings. 723 is the number, and there's maybe some others. So he did all this in his youth and when he was in the army during the war, because after that he didn't really indulge in that anymore. But his favorite subject was buildings and architectural structures. That's what he really excelled at. And he was told when he went to Vienna to go to art school to apply to get into the art academy there that he was really more fit for architecture. And he should go there, but the rules at the Academy for Architecture were different, and he didn't have the required preparatory courses or studies. And so he got turned down, and by then, you know, Hitler was only like 17 years old, and he was on his own. Both his parents had died, and he was in Vienna to become an artist, and this was hard on him. He didn't have hardly any money, so he's decided he was going to have to study himself, and he was going to study architecture. So he began a self-education course then and read and read and read, and he also painted at that time and probably did drawings of buildings all around Vienna that were landmarks. He sold them to tourists, and he put them in galleries, at least one gallery, probably more than one, had a market for them, you know, people would come and they wanted to have something to remember coming to Vienna, and they would buy one of his paintings. He supported himself this way. You know, on page 5 of the introduction, there's something that I admire very much. It's from his 1925 sketchbook, which shows a very professional-looking architectural drawing, floor plan of an art museum, his own design of a national art museum. And he's even got all the artists that he thinks are the most important German artists listed at the top with numbers and the galleries that he's got there in his floor plan where their work would be. He had that all worked out. This is how much he loved art, and he was aware of German art, the history, and all the great artists. he had tremendous knowledge and appreciation of art, and particularly German art, what he paid most attention to, but he knew other too. And he did all this when he was young. He moved to Munich before the war, and he did the same thing in Munich. He was studying all the time, and he was doing his paintings, and he was selling his paintings. And he had a landlord named Herr Popp, P-O-P-P, who has written about what kind of a person this young Adolf Hitler was, who rented a room from him. And he was poor. You know, he was always poor, but he was working all the time. Very, very admirable character. And then when war broke out, he, of course, loved Germany. He wanted to be a German citizen, not Austrian. He had complaints about Austria because of the Habsburgs. So he joined up, and that 4 years at the front changed his life, changed his ambitions too.
Thank you, Carolyn, for explaining that. Yeah, you know, I think that for pretty much everyone, I mean, for somebody like me who isn't an expert on this man, for people who know a thousand times more than I do about him and about World War II and about that history, I think that this book is very important for everybody because it was in German, which was written, the book was written, as we discussed prior to the show, in 1977, Geisler's book. I seriously doubt that many people would have been able to read that in German. So here you're taking this book, taking that portion of that book, and translating it, you and Willie, translating mm-hmm. it so English readers can really get a greater understanding of this guy, the artistic side of this guy. I mean, I would have never known it, and of course, I never would believe that the powers that be would want to present him in this light. So from someone, like I said, like me, who hasn't focused on Adolf Hitler, to read this, and I myself am an artist. I was born with the ability. I know you are too, as we discussed prior to the program. But for me to read this and to see what he was capable of, it really gives a completely new understanding of this guy. Versus, of course, like it's in the title, the warlord part of this guy. So that's why I think it's really important that folks pick up the book if this is something that they're interested in. I know there's a lot of people who are interested in Hitler because Hitler, I think, is the most recognized name, the most popular historical figure out there. And you would think that for someone to be the most popular historical figure ever in the history of the world, that this should be something that should be a part of their library.
Well, that's exactly right, Dave. Very well said. Yes, I believe also that people who don't know very much about Adolf Hitler would find this book very enlightening, and people who think they know everything about Adolf Hitler would also find it enlightening and would learn a lot from it, because there are things in this book that you don't find elsewhere, and just because of the nature of it. Now, Hermann Giesler got to know Adolf Hitler well, let's say beginning in 1938. They had several reasons that they made a good bond. One was Giesler had become one of Germany's leading architects, and Hitler was absolutely interested in redesigning the cities, the major cities of Germany, by actually what he called city building, actually redoing the central sections or major sections of Berlin first, and Munich, his kind of hometown city, the home of his party, and Linz in Austria, which he decided to do too, which is something that he had talked about when he was a boy living there to his young friend Kubitschek, who wrote a book called something like My Friend Adolf Hitler or something like that. But it's a fascinating book. But before Hitler ever went to Vienna, Hitler was just different. He was different from other kids by the time he got into his teens. And they would walk long distances all through Linz where they both lived, and he said Hitler would point out these buildings, major buildings in Linz, and criticize what was wrong with them and just tell him what he would do to fix them up and how he'd improve them. So he had this interest going all the way back. He always considered himself an artist. I think a lot of people who know anything about Hitler know that he, from the time he was 12, decided he was going to be an artist. And his father was very much opposed to that. Didn't want him to, he thought that was just crazy, you know. But this was something Hitler was absolutely determined on. That's all he wanted to do up until World War One and the fact that Germany lost and had to surrender the way it did, and the Versailles Treaty, what that did to Germany, that just crushed Adolf Hitler, who loved Germany so much, and he decided to become a politician. But before that, it was always about art. Why people will learn things in this book. If I had not put this together, I would love this book if it just came to me as new. You know, I would think, wow, this is fantastic. I cannot speak highly enough about it, truthfully. I don't mean to brag. It's not for that reason, but it's got to be one of the best books on Hitler that is out there. And it's not a big book. You know, it's not history in the sense of what historians write, and they have to have a great big book to show that they've done some important work and so on.
You know, it's fascinating because you wouldn't expect someone like Hitler to divulge everything he did to an architect. I mean, he told him basically, not everything, but he really gave him a lot of information. And I remember in the book, Geisler was talking about, is it Geisler or Geisler?
Geisler.
Geisler was talking about, that's right, like a geezer. Geisler was talking about how, you know, he's shocked that Hitler, with everything he had to worry about, all the whole weight of the world on his shoulders, that he would take the time to speak to him about this stuff. And that one fella said to him, "No, you don't understand. It's because he has all this weight on his shoulders that he's talking to you, because it relaxes him." So tell the listeners about Geisler, about what exactly he did and how he came to be in the good graces, really in the inner circle of Adolf Hitler.
I do want to point out that he always told Geisler these things afterwards. He didn't divulge things to Geisler. Not that you meant that, but just so that people understand. He wasn't divulging things as they were happening in his government or in the wartime. But afterwards, a year, 2 years later, when they were talking, he'd go over things. And Geisler commented how Hitler liked to go over these things from before, his decisions and what he did and why, because he wanted to kind of refresh himself as to why things were done the way they were. And that was Geisler's opinion. But Hitler also liked talking. He didn't write things, you know. He didn't leave us anything in writing except a couple, you know, some speeches. He wrote his own speeches and his will and testament and so on. But he didn't write things down, but he talked. And that's why we have the table talks, because they started having somebody write down what he was saying, because at meal times and after meal times, he would talk a lot. And everybody thought what he had to say was so fascinating and important that they'd listen. Finally they started writing it down. But anyway, this was what he liked to do. This is how he cleared his mind and how he confirmed things to himself. And now Geisler was, as I said, was an architect. Hitler, he always said, "If I had not become a politician," these were his words, "if I had not become a politician, I would have been a famous architect." He always said famous architect. He never considered himself a failed artist, like they like to call him today. He never considered that he would have been a failed architect or just an average architect. He knew he would have been a great architect. So he had plans that he wanted done, so he worked with both Albert Speer and Hermann Geisler were probably the two most well-known architects and successful in Germany at that time. Speer he had working on Berlin, and Geisler, who lived in Munich and had his office in Munich, his business, he he had working on Munich, and then later he put him in charge of Linz also, which was his kind of pet project. He had a different kind of relationship with Giesler than he did with Speer, because Giesler was just a very nice, modest person. And he admired Hitler very much. He had joined the party in the early 30s. You know, he was serious about it. He was a serious party member, National Socialist, and he had designed the building representing Germany at the Paris Exposition in 1938, and he won the gold medal for it, and they had already assigned him or asked him to represent Germany again at the World Exhibition in Rome coming up in 42. He was highly thought enough to do that, and Hitler liked just talking with architects. And then one more thing I need to mention about Giesler is that when the war started, he had served in World War I. He ended up being a pilot, a fighter pilot in that war. He didn't start out doing that, but that's what he ended up doing. He worked on that construction work they do in the beginning. And so now with World War II, he was given the title of General of Construction. And he was put in charge of some, both up in the north and then later down in the south, of war construction for the front, at the Eastern Front. That was a lot of work, you know, building railroads, building roads, building bridges, and all these things that needed to be done in order to keep the troops advancing. And so he was in charge of large areas doing that, and he had his own team there working at it, both the designers and the builders. Plus, he was keeping his firm going and working on these Munich and Linz plans. He was a very busy person. But when that might have been why he was able to go to the front so often, and Hitler would ask to see him, and then he asked to see him more and more because he was able to spend the little free time he had, because, you know, he couldn't sleep that well. Hitler couldn't sleep that well. He was always waiting on reports and so on. This was a manner, as you already brought up, a manner that he could relax. And all his staff and everybody there realized that Hitler found this, spending this time with Hermann Giesler, where he actually sat and drew plans with Giesler for these projects, these city building projects that meant so much to him. He actually participated in that way. And they would just talk while it was going on, you know. And his staff knew that this was very good for Hitler. He relaxed then, and he put him in a better mood and so on. As we put it on the book cover, that this was creative work that Hitler really needed. He said how much he missed art while the war was going on. He hated being having to be say a warlord all the time and not indulge in his love of art. Hitler was also a buyer of paintings. He paid a lot of attention to the painters of the day and what kind of work they were doing. He purchased their work. He was a tremendous supporter of the arts and music, too, which is in a whole other field that he was involved in as a supporter. So they would, when Hitler seemed to be getting down or whatever, they'd, like Bormann, Martin Bormann, would call Giesler and say, "Giesler, come to headquarters, and bring all your plans." And Giesler would go in spite of all the work he had to do, and he could do his work from there too. But Hitler was always happy to see him, greeted him very cordially, and he'd spend time with him every day. And at some period, he had all his meals with Hermann Giesler. This was a period when he was staying away from his generals. He was very upset with the generals after the failure of the Moscow advance in the winter of 41-42. And there's a chapter that goes into that. And Giesler is there, and they do this work together. And this went on all the way through to 1945. And this is where Giesler gets a lot of this information. He also spent time in Hitler's office or workroom. People came and went, talked about things to Hitler. And he told Giesler, just stay there. And Giesler would just, you know, overheard certain things. I don't think there was anything that he shouldn't have heard that he was allowed to hear. But, you know, he just saw a lot of it. And he got to know these generals, and he got to know the party members. And he knew Bormann quite well and had conversations We have conversations with Bormann, conversations with Alfred Jodl, and also with Keitel. I always forget. Keitel's name is Wilhelm. Wilhelm Keitel, top guy at the Supreme Command. And very interesting conversations with Jodl and with some other generals and with a lot of other people. And so this is, now let me just say this and run on just a little bit while I think of it. I've read a lot of these books, wonderful books, written by people who were in Hitler's company, who worked for Hitler, saw a lot of him on a regular basis every day, like his valet, you know, his private pilot, his Luftwaffe adjutant, and his secretaries, and all these people who have written books about Hitler. And they all say the same thing, that Hitler was a very mild-mannered, kind boss and employer, and most of these things that are said about him aren't true. But he wouldn't have talked to these people about the things that he said to Hermann Giesler. So Hermann Giesler is another one who's giving a firsthand account of all his experience, one-on-one with Adolf Hitler, but it's more interesting, more, I can't think of the word, but then you find with these other people in these other books I read. So this book is very unique. There's not another one like it, and I don't see how there ever will be, because Giesler had this very unique situation with Adolf Hitler.
Right. Maybe the word that would fit is more intimate.
There you go. There you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure, of course. I didn't want to interrupt you. But
you needed to.
you know me. It's amazing that, well, first of all, he writes very well. And I, of course, didn't read his German, but I imagine it corresponds very closely to the English translation, but he writes very well. He explains, and he was shocked about how much Hitler knew. He was shocked as an architect how much Hitler knew about architecture. And here, Hitler wasn't an architect, but he was obviously a very bright man. And it's a shame that the powers that be, primarily the Jews, it's constant Holocaust this, Holocaust movies. Movies about the Nazis, they just will, well, they can't let up, but they just will not let up and let people learn about this fella, more about this fella, about who he was and why he did the things that he did. Now I know the book just came out, but has the enemy at all attacked the book yet?
No, not that I know of. And I kind of doubt that they will. Because it's too well founded. And now the one thing is, there's no Holocaust denial in this book, because there's no mention of Holocaust and there's no mention of Jews even. I was trying to remember, you know, I mean, I've gone over it enough times, but I don't think there's a single instance of the word Jew appearing in this book, unless it would be, oh yes, there is. There's a couple of people where we describe them. He doesn't, but we describe them as Jews because they were an artist. It just doesn't come up, and I don't believe it was being covered up by Giesler, who probably wouldn't have been able to write about it in the 70s when the book came out in Germany anyway. So, but I don't know if it ever came up. Hitler may have referred to Jews sometimes in his discussions with Giesler, but if so, Giesler didn't put it in the book, because, you know, he had a hard time, I understand, finding a publisher for the book, because it wasn't against Hitler. It was a Hitler-friendly book. It was positive toward Hitler, so they don't like that. Nobody could publish it, but he did find one. And I don't think the book is, except from the certain number of people, there's a lot of them, though, you know, who did want to read the book and did know about it and do want to know everything. It didn't become a big seller in Germany. And in fact, Arno Brecker, who is probably the most famous and probably most people agree the top sculptor of the Third Reich, And he wasn't really trying to work for the Third Reich. That was the kind of work he did. And Hitler recognized his sculpture, which you'll find on the cover of the book. And we have this on the inside, too, a letter from Brecker, it's called, at the very end of the book, at the end of the 13th chapter, where Brecker wrote a letter to Giesler. And he mentioned, he said, your book will either be a sensation or it will be ignored to death. It will be silenced to death. And the second was what happened. It was silenced to death. The press, the media, publishing companies and all, they didn't mention it. They didn't talk about it. And only in this special little clique group or whatever did anybody talk about it. So that was the fate. That's the fate of people who try to write the truth.
Yes. Yes, they... The term I like to use is quarantine. They could either attack it or they can quarantine it and just completely ignore it and hope it goes away and just don't pay any attention to it. And, of course, the bulk of the masses respond to what the mainstream media does or doesn't say, which is the main reason why we're in the mess that we're in. Because there are so few people who have open minds enough that they want to learn everything they can. Again, this is particularly important, this book, especially because it was ignored, as you explained. It was quarantined. Giesler's book was quarantined. And Giesler was actually attacked by the West, wasn't he?
What do you mean attacked by the West? You mean when he was after the war or later on after he wrote the book?
Right after the war.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He was deemed a war criminal. He was arrested. He was considered a minor war criminal, while Albert Speer was considered a major war criminal. Because Albert Speer, who was a very ambitious person and very different personality from Hermann Giesler, and, of course, Adolf Hitler admired Albert Speer very much, and he befriended him, too, and he gave him a lot of responsibility. And Albert Speer was ambitious for that and was willing to take it and go as high as he could go. And that put him in danger after the war. Whereas Giesler, who was a modest man, who was very sincere and just tried to carry out what he was given to do to the very best of his ability. And he has some conversations. You're going to find this so interesting. And you get to know Giesler. I just think he's a wonderful man. I don't want to say a dear man, like, you know, pat him on the head or something, because he was quite a brilliant man himself and a brave man. And he made a tremendous contribution to the country he loved and was loyal to. But at the end there, he was just an architect, as far as the Allies knew. But Speer was, of course, had become Minister of Armaments. So they put him on trial, though, because I don't really know what he was charged with, truthfully. I never found that out. But he was sentenced to life imprisonment at hard labor, as so many of them were. And his trial came later than the main Nuremberg trials. He may have been at Nuremberg, taking place there, but he was sentenced and he was in the prison, but he only had to spend a few years there, and he was released in 1952, as many of them were released around that time, more and more of them, because they had changed their position vis-a-vis the Soviet Union and Germany, and now the Germans were supposed to be allies, and the Soviet Unions were the enemy of the Americans, and the Americans just come off, I'm sorry, very, very badly in this whole period, and I have no sympathy for anything that the Americans did during this time. But what else I wanted to say about that was that after he was released, Giesler, he went back to his architectural firm, started that up again, worked at that, and began working on this book, got it published in 1977. I just want to, you know, reinforce that to get people to understand where what we've done is coming from and who it's coming from. So,
right, exactly. Yeah, it's a fantastic book, and as I said before, anyone who doesn't know, for anyone who doesn't know much about this fella, Adolf Hitler, and for those who think they know everything there is to know about Adolf Hitler, you don't. Because if you didn't read Giesler's book, and if you don't know German, you couldn't have. Here's your opportunity to read what this fella had to say about the man who he got to spend so much intimate time with. And he really knows how to articulate his feelings and articulate what Hitler said. He obviously has a pretty good memory for what Hitler said. He remembered everything, and this was written in 77. Do you know when he started writing it?
No, because I don't. I have his book. I have his book in German, but I can't read it. And let me just say that is why I've seen to it that a lot of things, a lot of German documents have been translated. I have a lot of that on my website, carolynjaeger.net. That's a failing of mine, but it has caused me to see that a lot of things, speeches and so on that nobody's ever read before, have been translated into English because I wanted them to be. And I'll just put in a plug here for my work, for my material on the Wenger family on my website that really should go in a book too. The Willy Wenger and his hero brother Leopold Wenger, wonderful stuff if you ask me. It's all been translated into English from German. So back to Giesler, I would say that he started working on that right away. He may have started while he was in prison, you know, writing down. I don't know what he was capable of doing. I know that the top war criminals who were included Speer, who weren't killed, who weren't hanged, were not able to write anything. And he wrote on toilet paper or something notes and gave them to some friend that came to visit him in little tiny letters with a pencil on toilet paper because they had a lot of time there and they can remember it all. And the Allies didn't want these guys to write any of their memoirs. They wanted to kill a lot of them, so they couldn't write anything or say anything further about what really happened. And so Giesler would have been working on it, I am sure, all along, because there's a lot to cover. And whatever notes he might have taken at the time, he was such an admirer of Hitler that after he had certain, you know, conversations with him, he may have gone back to his bunker and written down, I would imagine that he would have done that, written down notes for himself, and they would have been kept there with his wife and when he was put in prison, and he wasn't important enough for them to bother his wife or kids or anything. So, you know, they would have been there for him when he got out. And I think it's quite possible when somebody he always emphasized what a powerful impression Hitler made. And, he said every time I was in his presence, the extraordinary energy and the power of his personality was so overwhelming that I just agreed with him, you know, that, yeah, we could win the war. Whatever kind of discouraging thoughts I was having, whatever doubts and depression I was having about the way things were going, because this was in the last years, they would just go away because of the power of his positivity and so on and his personality. So Hitler made that kind of an impression on Giesler and on other people too. And that would help him to remember and he would also recall the way Hitler spoke and the cadence, you know, the type of words he used. You remember that about people who make a big impression on you.
Yes, exactly. He obviously made a big impression on him. Hitler did, mm-hmm. And this is a very important book because it's material that was not available up to this point in the English language and put together the way that you and Willie did. And again, for those folks interested in Adolf Hitler, for those folks interested in World War II, I know there's a lot of people who are interested in World War II, mm-hmm. There's a lot of material in here.
Well, let me tell you, Dave, yes. That speaking of World War II and that, I would say a couple of the major subjects that, this book covers a lot of very interesting and new material in is on the treason in Germany and the traitors. And it's not, doesn't stop with just Valkyrie, which people think because they saw the movie with that guy, Cruise, that they know all about Valkyrie. You know, Willie wanted to go see that movie. We were working on this at the time that movie came out. And I said, I'm not going to that movie because I had stopped ever wanting to see a movie with Adolf Hitler in it that wasn't Hitler. You know, it was some actor or people, you know, acting these things out or not the real people. I like the real newsreels. I love the old newsreels of the real people, but I don't like the movies. And he said, oh, I'm going to see it. He had to go see it. But he left before it was over. He said it was so wrong, so full of lies, so stupid. And, well, that's stupid is my word, but just so wrong. He just got up and walked out, which surprised me after getting in there that he would walk out on it before it was over. But people think that they, you know, somebody was telling me just the other day, oh, you know, Cruise in Valkyrie. Oh, that was a great movie. Well, there you go. But this, it goes beyond what happened with Valkyrie, but it goes into everything about Valkyrie in detail. And then all the rest of the treason. And, there's a chapter called The Last Circle, Valkyrie, The Last Circle, which is about how far it went, you know, and who was on the outskirts and who were the final people that they discovered and caught and all the things that were learned, and also treason at the front and problems right at the front with the officers and fighting men and somebody, you know, doing things that I'm not going to say on the air. You have to read it, but it's in chapter 7. That was something I didn't even understand, really take in until after we had these book chapters put together and I was proofing it. And I read this real quick and I said, you know, I didn't really grasp that before, how serious this situation was. And that's in chapter 7. And then another thing that I think is unusual about this book is Hitler's personality as a person, not as either an artist, famous man, or a commander or a Führer, but as a human being. You really get that so often as he's with Giesler. You get the sense of what a friend he was. He considered Giesler a friend, and you know, he valued his friends. He valued them very much. You just see the human in him. And I also think it shows him not only as an artist, but as a humanist. And I've studied the dictionary definition of humanist, and in my opinion, he fits it. He was concerned about the human condition of the European people, and particularly, of course, the German people wanted to improve it. And that's what a humanist is supposed to be all about. I'm not saying he was a humanitarian, but he was a humanist. And I also like to say that because I thought about if I had only one word to describe Adolf Hitler, after all I've learned from Hermann Giesler, what would it be? And I came up with the word builder, which comes out very powerfully in chapter 1 in the Paris, after the Paris trip. You know, that Hitler's whole desire was to build these great improvements in Germany to make German cities wonderful places to live and all Germany a wonderful place to live for all the German people. And he wanted beyond that. He knew that Germans had been pushed around. Of course, he was right there at the Versailles Treaty time and all of that in the war, 4 years at the front. He knew how the world was pushing the Germans around and what they wanted to do to the Germans. And he said, you know, we have to unite our country and not allow them to do that. And that's what he was about. He was about all that supposed territory he was taking from other people, he was bringing it back to Germany where it used to belong, and he was uniting the country, and he wanted Germans to be able to defend themselves against all these enemies, which included elements of the ruling British class and the Roosevelt administration, which we know was all included there. He knew all that. He was trying to make a strong but also a wonderful Germany. That's all he wanted to do. He did not want to take over the world. He was not deluded or deranged. He knew Germany couldn't take over the world. He knew he had already taken on more than probably they could do, but he felt he had no choice. So that's another part of the book, how he explains why he did the things he did and why he went into Russia, into, they called it Russia most of the time, knowing that they didn't know enough, that how difficult it was going to be, but hoping, because he had no choice, because it became known, he knew very well that the Soviet Union, Stalin, had a plan to invade Germany, and it turned out it was right. He just beat it by a short period of time. Everything he did, he just beat the enemy by a very short period of time. And there's a lot of examples of him talking about that in the book, pictures and explaining it and so on. So people, you know, as you say, we can't emphasize enough, people are going to learn a lot. That's my final word there.
That was very good, Carolyn. You're right. For those folks who are interested, for those folks who want to gain some more insight into this man, into World War II, into the history of the time, it's a fantastic book. And again, Carolyn, I want to thank you for all the time you spent explaining this to listeners. And as always, I'm looking forward to talking to you again real soon.